Oh, shit. Episode 457, Comedy Film Nerds, halfway to 914.
First episode of March.
Yeah, it is the first episode of March, which is exciting.
Yes. You just got to beware of the Ides.
The Ides of March. All right, Chris, come on.
You know, the Shakespeare references will come into play in the next episode as well.
You'll be able to tell that this week's and next week's were recorded the same afternoon. Yeah.
And in reverse order.
So, I don't know. I feel like, is there any sort of thing we need to talk about?
You know, no, the hell with it.
No, I'm
just angry that there's nothing to talk about. That's
you felt really disappointed.
Yeah, I was like, you know what? There has to be. No, there isn't.
You were really mad.
Yeah.
You were really mad.
Disappointment turns to anger, Graham.
It does. All right. Episode 457.
With nothing to report at the top.
Nothing happened. Oh, I'll say this. I did a bunch of shows in Chicago.
Not good enough.
Failure. You are a failure. I want to thank everybody that came out. There were some film nerds that came out to the shows.
Was it the Zanies?
Yeah, I did the Zanies. Mm-hmm. All three of them. I did the Zanies in St. Charles, the one in the downtown Chicago, the original one that's been there since 1978 that has a headshot of me from 1992.
Awesome.
You can see me wearing a vest over a t-shirt. Thank God it's not full length, so we don't see the acid wash jeans and with the peg leg party cuff that I used to like to wear.
But we could draw that in if we want.
It's there. The 90s were complicated, guys. There was a lot of weird things happening.
Yeah, it's nobody's fault.
It's nobody's fault. It's a little on me. I knew what I was doing. I made an active choice.
Yeah.
I got to own that. I got to take responsibility for who I am.
And you didn't even buy the jeans acid watch. You did it yourself.
I home washed them.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was doing a home perm and it just all made sense. And then I did four nights out at the one in Rosemont. So it was a lot of fun.
Awesome.
So thanks to everybody for coming out.
Cool. Well, we have a first-time guest today.
Another first-time guest, everybody. Mm-hmm. Another one of the voices from the Who Shot You podcast, April Wolf, is here.
Hi. It's me. Thanks for having me on.
Yeah.
Welcome.
And then you have another podcast called Switchblade Sisters. What's that?
Every week I have a female filmmaker on, writer, director, producer, actor, that kind of thing, and we talk about their favorite genre film.
Ooh.
Like, we've got Adrienne Barbeau coming up.
Oh, wow.
I know. And I'm not going to tell people what she's going to talk about because it's a surprise.
So. That's awesome.
Yeah.
I would love to just talk to Adrienne Barbeau about what her favorite movies are.
Oh, my God. I've been doing that by email. And I'm just like, let's just keep the conversation going. You know, tell me more. What else do you like? Give me more options. Yeah.
Fantastic. So what are some of your favorite episodes that you've done thus far or favorite interviews?
Well, we had Emily Gordon on, and that was a really great, great conversation. We talked about the Craig Zoller film, Bone Tomahawk. And Emily is just a very, very astute film watcher, and we get to talk about film craft a lot. So she gave all these really insightful things about how she writes and stuff that I never would have guessed, you know, like how her psychology mind works. That was really awesome.
That's cool.
Yeah.
Right on. And those are all on Max Fun.
Yeah.
Well, Who Shot You? I've done it, which was a fun podcast. And we had Ricky on the show last month. So
yeah, I have to email him. I have to get on.
It's a fun that you guys have a really fun format. I really like how we broke down a movie and then we talked about all different kinds of stuff. And like we got into this discussion about LA crime movies.
Oh God. Yeah, that's right.
That was awesome. Just all movies that were shot in LA.
Yeah.
That had a crime thing to them. That was a really cool conversation. It was such a specific.
It tests your knowledge. Every single time I do it, I hope that I can earn the title of film critic because I'm usually sitting there looking at my phone, hoping that I can remember titles of things. So
right.
It's part of my life.
Yeah, it does definitely feel like.
The beauty of Google.
Yeah. Yeah, thank God.
We, we have to check the computer every once in a while as well.
All the time.
Wow, you guys are giving away all the secrets.
We just got to pretend like we're super smart.
Yeah.
And then, so you're a film critic. Where can people?
I used to be LA Weekly and Village Voice. Now I just kind of roam around and I do whatever writing people ask me to do. AV Club and The Wrap is in Film Comment. I write a lot for those ones. So
nice. All right.
All right.
Let's get into it.
Let's start with Fighting With My Family. Now, Graham, you saw this. This is actually based on WWE superstar Paige and her family.
You know, it really, this movie was fun. It was a blast, and it's based on a true story, obviously. So they did the thing at the end, and spoiler alert a little bit, but you know, the thing they do at every drama or docudrama
biopic,
or whatever, biopic is they show the actual people at the end or whatever. So if you're a big WWE fan, you probably know who she is. And so they showed her actual family, and, and you know, they did a good job. I think it was, there were some, you know, I would call them Disney moments, you know, that are just sort of like feel good, like, you know, this is going to happen. But I was fine with it. And The Rock, you know, he's crazy engaging.
And Stephen Merchant directed, and I think he wrote too, wrote on it. He's one of the creators of The Office with Ricky Gervais, and he was in The Tooth Fairy with The Rock. I mean, they kind of have a bit of a history. But he's always been so funny. Like, so I figured he'd probably be a really good choice to make this movie.
You know, it was fun. And there's a scene in the movie, and this makes me like the movie better, where she, you know, she's got dark hair and she's from the UK. So she's not, doesn't have a tan. And then for a tryout, she dyes her hair blonde and puts on fake tanner. And I was like, what? Did that really happen? Yes, that she actually did that, which was part of the whole story. If she's like, what's my identity?
Yeah.
You know, because she's at this tryout and there's all these like beautiful like model types and she's like, that's not me. And so I was a lot of fun. I don't know. I'm not a huge WWE fan, but it was fun. And you know, it hit the beats. But I knew that, you know, you watch the trailer and you're like, okay, that's what this is going to be. True story. You know.
Now, how much was The Rock in it? Like, was he only in a couple of scenes? Because I feel like it's... may not have been a huge part of the story.
You know, he was in it enough that it didn't, it wasn't like he was in one scene and like, oh boy, they sure did exploit this.
Right.
Yeah. We got you for 2 hours.
Yes.
Everything's green screened around him. Like, it's like Charlize Theron in that Fast and Furious movie.
Right. It wasn't that. And the scenes that he was in, you know, made sense in the con, you know, cause he's The Rock and he's playing The Rock, he's playing himself and all of that. I don't know, it's what you would expect, and it was fun and had its heartfelt moments. And you know, when you're on the road in St. Charles, Illinois, and it's a $6 matinee, you can't go wrong.
No. So
What about Nick Frost? Was he very funny? He's supposed to be her father?
Yeah, you know, he was great. Actually, he was very funny in that. And he played this, there's a fun scene where his...
It's weird seeing him without Simon Pegg, right?
Yeah. Yeah, whenever he shows up, you're like, why? Oh, it's like Attack the Block when he's there. They're like, why? Well, what are you doing?
Where's Simon?
Yeah.
So this is the actual true story. So it's in the movie. So he's got two kids, a son and a daughter. Mm-hmm. And... there's a scene where the son starts dating this woman and brings their family over, and they're this very prim and proper English parents, and they're in the house of this, you know, Nick Frost is, and his wife, I forget who plays his wife, but she does a great job. But they, in real life, they were like, they met in recovery. They're both like ex-drug addicts. So they're, you know... And, you know, the prim and proper parents are like, well, you know, wrestling's fake. And he's like, I'm sorry. You know, like he plays all those moments really well. He was great. He was great as the dad. And you believed, it didn't feel like, well, this is some over the top. A dad would never be this. He felt, and there were some heartfelt moments where you're like, oh, that's what a dad who's a little nuts about wrestling, but he would self-correct and. Yeah, Nick Frost is great in it. I'd say watch it.
All right, fair enough.
Yeah, Florence Pugh is one of my favorite actresses right now. She was in a movie called Lady Macbeth a couple of years ago, and that made my top 10 list. And she was Lady Macbeth, and she is a psycho in that movie, and it is really tense. And she murders people, and it is, very intense movie.
Which she doesn't get Macbeth to do it.
So, I mean, her doing kind of like this old English type of movie and then moving on to a commercial wrestling film is, I mean, I'm excited to see what she does next.
She's young, too.
Isn't she? Mm-hmm. Yeah, very young.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's really, and all the performances were solid, and there was no... Yeah, there's a bunch of cool little heartfelt reveals in there. And Vince Vaughn is not being all Vince Vaughn-y. He's not right. all like Vince Vaughn-y. You know, he's being this kind of hard-assed coach who's just like, you know, he's not trying to, he's not being the wise ass. He's being this hard-ass coach that's just like, you know, look around you, half of you are going to be gone, you know, and I'm begging to cut people, make it easier for me. Like, he's really pushing these people. Like, I don't know, maybe that's what the WWE training, I mean, WWE.
I'm sure.
Yeah. It's
got to be competitive.
Yeah. And it's their movie. So it's their blessing. So they go to their actual training facility in Orlando and you see what they have to go through. So I was really like, oh, wow. I was like, okay, this is a great way to spend an afternoon. In the middle of Illinois when it's 15 degrees out.
There's always that caveat at the end I keep hearing. You know?
All right. It's a heated movie theater. Check it out.
It's a heated, yeah. I mean, it's not like you got to see Roma on the big screen. It's not that level of, but it was fun and it's, you know, and all the performances were good. So
all right,
I'd say check it out. All right.
And all right, now we have a special preview review. Of Captain Marvel by our guest. So April, without no spoilers, can you give us a broad overview of the movie? Because we will be seeing it this weekend.
Yeah, we are going to do a spoiler up with Jackie Cation. We're not sure when that'll drop because I'm out of town next week, but we definitely will do one for sure.
Oh, like even the beginning of this movie is a spoiler. Everything in this movie is a spoiler. But I mean, you just need to know it's an origin story first off, and you've got it. Brie Larson playing Captain Marvel, and it's set in 1995, or at least that's what we can assume from the blockbuster that she's dropped into when she falls to Earth. Because there's a True Lies poster, there's a Babe poster.
Right.
You know, she picks up like a 2 VHS set of The Right Stuff, and there's the Radio Shack, which is where she has to get all of her electronics from, and people have pagers, you know, all of that kind of stuff. So it's, I think it definitely evokes the 90s, though. I have a problem with nostalgia pieces. I don't know how you guys feel about the kind of like Stranger Things effect that there has been where, you know, you just kind of like set something in a time and place and just kind of reference something like, oh, here's a Rubik's Cube. And then everyone laughs because they're supposed to laugh because weren't those funny and they were everywhere in the 80s, you know?
Right. So they show a big cell phone and go, wow, look how small this cell phone is.
But this one, I think, it's done a little bit better of a job of kind of grounding itself in the 90s, which is, it's fun because, you know, you've got a full 90s soundtrack with, of course, a lot of songs that have female fronted, you know, their female vocalists. And, I guess it also has some filmmaking techniques, too, that feel somewhat 90s.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Like, some of the action sequences just kind of remind me of the 90s, which means that I think some people might find it a little bit slow in some parts.
Oh, interesting.
But for me, I actually kind of appreciated just slower, less complex action sequences. And you can hear that even reflected in the score. Sometimes that score, I don't know if you guys remember like sci-fi movies that would come out in like the late 90s, because this is around like Event Horizon time, right?
Right.
So there's a ton of stuff that's just like, they're just kind of pumping them out.
Event Horizon should never be referenced to any point in time.
I love Event Horizon so much. I like rewatched it earlier and I was
This
so
is where
into
we
it.
Diverge, but that's okay.
Oh God, you know, that's fine. If any listeners want to come over and watch Event Horizon anytime, I will...
You have it on a laser disc?
Yeah, exactly. I will, you know, bring you into my cult of Event Horizon and Sam Neill. But there's a certain kind of sound that those movies had where they were kind of like pre-Y2K, where they were like, yes, techno, the revolution. And this is before The Matrix in 1999, right? So they're kind of inching towards that. And you've got this kind of like pinging digital staccato sound in the back. And, you know, if you can kind of like picture that. And there's definitely inflections of that in the score, which I thought was really fun, you know? Like, if you're actually paying attention, the fucking costume designer, is great because she worked on a ton of stuff in the 90s, like a ton of space shit. Like, nice. She worked on Star Trek Insurrection.
Oh, yeah.
She worked on Mission to Mars. She worked on, oh, God, what was the other one? Blade, you know? So,
oh, wow.
Yeah, so, like, if you look at the costume, specifically what Ben Mendelsohn's character is wearing, Talon, he is a Skrull, which is the, you know, the enemy of the Kree people.
Shape-shifting aliens.
Thank you. I was like, I know someone's going to be more specific than me on this podcast. But if you look at his costumes, you have this kind of deconstructed look that looks so 90s from that time period, you guys. Like, right. there's some things that I see in the reviews that no one was even looking at. I'm like, were you guys watching the same movie that I was? Because there's some interesting stuff that they were, you know, looking at for homage of film history. So,
how was Brie Larson? I mean, she, you know, obviously won the Oscar for Room. She's amazing in that. And then I was excited with this casting because I was like, I think she's a really fantastic actress, and we're just scratching the surface. How was it for her, seeing her in this role? Because she's never played anything like this, really, of just like superhero.
I think there's still a subtlety to her performance, which I think you're going to get from anyone who comes from an indie background. For me, that worked because it felt like some of the tone that they were going for was a little bit Buffy in performance, if that makes sense. And so it worked for me because there's a kind of kid sister quality to her character in the beginning, which is that she kind of has to fight against, you know? And I appreciate it. I liked the performance more than I thought about it.
So the directors, Anna Boden and Ryan Fleck, they co-directed it, and they also wrote...
They did Sugar and Half Nelson, too. You guys might remember those.
Now, I was going to ask, too, about, because they're also writers on it, there are 8 credited writers on the script, which means there were even more writers involved, because those are just the credited ones. Like, usually when that happens, the script ends up being disjointed and a bit messy. Like, how did it feel?
The thing is that I could see it either way. If I didn't know that there were 8 writers when I was looking at, like, like 4 people got a story by credit, if I didn't see that, I could be like, this is still a good movie. This is a great movie. But having seen that, I was like, oh, no, I can see it. I can, you know, I can. But I think it works either way. You know, there's almost a PC-ness to this in, you know, it's a little bit kind of fractured, and I like it. I don't know. I don't enjoy movies that often that have a very kind of by-the-book type of thing. And this at least circumvents a little bit of the origin story kind of thing that we're used to. So,
and then... So are you, overall, are you a fan of the Marvel films?
No.
No, okay.
No, I don't like it when they're all together. I come to Marvel films not as a superhero comic book reader. You know, if I was reading comics, I was reading not the superhero ones generally. Right. And, you know, graphic novels, obviously. So this is a different kind of fandom that I have, where I just see them as movies, and a lot of them kind of fall short for me. But yeah, I had this, you know, fun with this one. And
so where do you put this then in terms of a bunch of the other Marvel films?
Well, I mean, I think it's from recent ones, I would say Black Panther is still first for me. Thor... Ragnarok would be the next one. I think this would be after that.
Okay.
Just because, and it, you know, it's really, truly, purely because it's attempting to do something a little bit different, which has, you know, it's just a little bit different. And maybe it's just me being like, oh, it's of our time. And 10 years later, I'll be like, oh, fuck that shit. You know, like, why do I like that? But it's hitting my zeitgeist.
Well, that's interesting because, I mean, that's the thing we've talked a lot about on this show over the years, is how Marvel does a good job of each movie is, it's like, this is a war movie.
Yeah.
This is a
spy movie.
Spy movie. This is a
fantasy movie.
This is a fantasy movie. So this is like a period piece, really, like a 90s. This is a 90s movie, really. So I'm pumped to see it, man.
Yeah, I'm excited to see it this weekend.
Yeah, I'm going to see it this weekend. So, all right.
Cool. Well, I saw the movie Paddleton, and I have to say, what? I had low expectations going into this movie.
What is this?
And this is a Netflix movie, and that right away puts me in a bad mood whenever I say Netflix movie, because there are so many horribly unwatchable Netflix movies there.
But then you keep going back?
Here's why. Because of, because of math. I figure probability-wise, a good one has to sneak through eventually.
The universal language
yes.
is what keeps Chris
because,
going.
You know, for every Roma, there's, you know, 20 unwatchable movies. So I thought, okay, well, Roma snuck through. Maybe something else snuck through. And this is why I thought this one might be one of the ones. This was made by the Duplass brothers. And, you know, they're the Mark Duplass and I think Jay is the brother. They have been flying under the radar in Hollywood for many, many years, and they make such good movies and TV shows, and they're all character-driven and heartfelt, and different genres, dramas, horror. They've done all sorts of different things. And this movie is a small, tiny, independent movie about two friends. One, they're neighbors. One lives on top of the other one. One's Ray Romano, and one's Mark Duplass. And then one of them realizes that he has cancer, and he decides that instead of getting sick and going out, you know, dying and sickly, he wants to basically go to a pharmacy, get a prescription, and end his life before he gets really sick. So this is the journey that him and his friend go on. And, the you know, these guys are in their 50s. You know, Ray Romano is not in his 30s anymore. And this movie is so good. It's, like, really heartfelt. It's a great drama. It's funny in parts, but you know, it's billed as like a dark comedy or dramedy. It's not. It's a drama with funny parts in it. Because, you know, whenever you put a comedian in a drama movie, like the marketing, no, it's a dramedy. It's a comedy. No, you could call it a drama and still have a comedian in it. It's okay. You know, you could say it's a drama with light-hearted moments, and it was. But it's exactly the kind of movie that streaming was made for. It's a smaller film. It's a character-driven film. It's a friendship-y type film. And it's not a big blockbuster. It doesn't need to go in a theatrical release. It's the exactly what, you know, so they got it right on many different levels, Netflix, on this. And one of the reasons, I think, is because Mark Duplass and the Duplass brothers, they're used to making their shit and being left alone.
Right.
So I think this is one of those things where they already know what they're doing. Like, they don't need studio notes. It's not a script that they had left over that, you know, Netflix brought up. It's not like getting a big deal with Netflix to make four movies. I'm like, well, I don't have four movies. Let me just put The Cobbler or, you know, The Hateful Eight together. Like, you know, the way Adam Sandler put his movies together. This was a really thought out, heartfelt, really great drama movie about a relationship between two guys. Now, there was a lot of improv in it, but here's what was so genius about it is everyone thinks improv is like, oh, well, they're just kind of saying whatever comes to mind and it's funny and that's what improv is. It is not. True improv is specific to the character. So if you have a well-developed character, what you say, even if it's funny, if it's out of character, doesn't work.
Right.
So every joke, every line had to be not only funny, but in the character of what these people would, these guys would say. And these are, like, you know, introverted guys. Like Ray Romano is like borderline on the spectrum kind of kind of thing, where, you know, these guys are just lonely. All they have are each other. They watch kung fu movies, they eat frozen pizza, and, you know, when one of them's dying, it's their whole world is each other. And it's just a great, heartfelt, character driven movie. And it's, you know, the tone never breaks. The characters never break. Like, every improv, every line is specific to these characters, and you believe every word that they say to each other, and you believe everything that they feel. And you could see Ray Romano was directed so well in this movie. Even though he was improvising lines, you know, that character was, you know, very specifically given to him, and he stayed in that character no matter what he was saying or doing. So I got to say, it's one of those diamonds in the rough for the Netflix movies, and really check it out. These guys did an amazing job, like Mark Duplass. And it's also the kind of movie where you're looking at these performances, and I'm like, is this going to get remembered during, you know, nomination time? Like, you know, even just like a SAG Award or Golden Globe, they both do a fantastic job. It's really a, you know, you could say that, you know, he might be, one's the lead and one's the other, but really it's, I would say they're, you know, they're co-leads in this movie. Like, I guess, you know, when you submit for awards, you have to pick, like, well, which one's lead, which one's supporting. But
yeah, that's such bullshit.
Yeah, it really is, because really I could easily see, okay, well, these are easily, either character could be lead, because it's their story together, really. It's not necessarily one story and one guy's like along for the ride. It's really there's the story of their friendship together. So
when you said that you really liked it, I was like, I guarantee that neither Duplass directed it. And no. Neither Duplass directed it. Because no. There's a certain thing that happens when they collaborate with other people outside of themselves mm-hmm. where it gets better. Mm-hmm. But when they are left to their own devices, the movies that I've seen, they can't stick the ending. Mm-hmm. There's, you know, kind of a filler in the center. Even though there's these great characters, you're like, I know how to fix this. Why didn't they do that? You know, but then you see that, like, there's a movie, for instance, called The One I Love, which is really wonderful. And mm-hmm. Mark Duplass is maybe at his best. And mm-hmm. Jay Duplass is at his best in a movie called, is it Inside Out from last year? Mm-hmm. And they're working with other people. And right. I just appreciate mm-hmm. when they have new collaborators.
Well, yes. This is an interesting collaboration. So the director, Alex Lehman, is really more of a camera grip, apparently, but he's got Asperger's or Us as a documentary, and then he did Blue Jay, Paddleton, and then a TV series on tour with Asperger's or Us, which sounds like is what informed the
Ray Romano's
the
character.
Ray Romano yeah. character, mm-hmm. which is interesting, you know, and it's like, you bring up a good point, April, about I think it's when you have a filmmaking team that's good or whatever, but it is like, I always say Robert Rodriguez, when he, he needs to be, when he's too much in himself and he edits his own films, I think that causes a problem. And when people collaborate with other people, it does bring out the best, because I think in some cases of filmmaker collaborations, there's obviously a lot of really fantastic examples of like, oh, when those two get together, man, they mm-hmm. really crank it out. But then sometimes it can fall into, well,
creative differences.
Well, not even yeah. creative differences, but like, well, we always do it this way. Mm-hmm. Versus yeah. if you're working with somebody that's different, they're going to come in and go, how about this thing yeah. that right. you never have thought of?
They won't let you be lazy, because that's, yeah. that's what we do, right? We're creating these things, and you know, we've got our rhythm, and people have, you know, been like accepting of them, and things are good enough, and you're like, mm-hmm. great. And you kind of keep coasting on that. But like, okay, someone comes in and says, you're being lazy. And you're like, actually, you're right.
That's a real
the thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and you need to be challenged. You need to like, I'm going to try this thing. It feels uncomfortable. I've got this thing in my bag that I know works, but I'm going to try the uncomfortable.
Let's get out of our comfort zones.
Let's get yeah. out of mm-hmm. our comfort zones. And when you do that, it's like, oh man, that's anything can happen.
I will say this movie is probably fairly well in the Duplass Brothers comfort zone as far as like, you know, characters and character-driven movies and type of thing, but that's okay. I mean, you know, it's interesting. They got Ray Romano out of his comfort zone, because for you sure. don't really see him, you know, portraying characters like this. Yeah. So.
He's in Get Shorty now, pretty, you know, until eternity at this point, mm-hmm. right? That show's doing quite well. So, mm-hmm.
so I thought it was great. It was a really good movie, and it was a small indie film that really deserves to find an audience, but it's like a great example of like, this doesn't need to be in the theater. This is,
right.
you know, a perfect streaming movie that, you know, you could watch and really enjoy.
Mm-hmm. All right. I saw on the plane to Chicago, this documentary, The King, which is about Elvis Presley. So what happens is the filmmaker got Elvis's 63 Rolls Royce and drives across country and interviews people in the back of it. And also has some sit down interviews and really kind of, it's amazing, because the interview was happening during the 2016 election. So we start sort of using the car and Elvis is sort of this.
It has a political spin, this movie.
For sure.
It?
Mm-hmm. Because it's like, you know, Elvis was sort of the working man's rock star or whatever. I mean,
the white working man's
rock star. Yeah, and they get into a lot of that. They get yeah. into they and they have different points of view. Some that, like, they interview Van Jones, the CNN guy, and he's just like, my dad hated Elvis because he took these blues songs that these black artists had done. He was really mad. And then they interview some other people who are like, hey, Elvis, black music never would have gotten this recognized. Mm. Because it needed a white guy behind it. Sam Phillips saw this. Sam Phillips, the guy who ran Sun Records, was like, I can't, America, they will not buy records. I can't put a black artist singing these songs, and it just won't work. So he was like, Sam Phillips was literally like, I need a white face with a black voice that gets black music. And they even go into the history. So Elvis, you know, he didn't steal the music necessarily because he grew up in Tupelo, Mississippi. He went to a black church. He listened to that kind of music. And you go and you interview all these people in Tupelo. But one of the things they're talking about, the backdrop of all of this, is like the American dream is gone. Because it was like in the 50s, post-war America, you worked hard, you got a good job, you upward mobility. And they interview all these people who are just like, that's gone, man. There's no jobs. This is closed. That is closed. And it's like that thing that, you know, Trump tapped into, like it or not, he tapped into that, you know, he ran on a populist message and, you know, they go into these towns, you know, Memphis.
Didn't do anything about it, but he ran on it.
Yeah, so it was a full populist.
Yeah. But like, they're like, there's no jobs here and we don't have this. And the only thing Tupelo has is Elvis. That's the only thing we have, you know, and this, we're out of business. And it's really like, wow. And you're seeing, I mean, the director did a really, it's a really inventive way. You could just do a sit down documentary about Elvis and it would be intriguing. Mm-hmm. Because,
yeah. All the talking head stuff, that which has probably been done before.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
There's a million documentaries about this guy, but this under the backdrop of America today and, you know, sort of, and then as Elvis, you know, Colonel Tom Parker, oh my God, came in and said, hey, we'll do a 50-50 down the middle. Oh, you got it. You're a manager. You should get 10 to 15% at the most. And how he just drove Elvis later in his life when he got out of the army and just made him do this dumb, this thing after. And Elvis was like, oh.
It's the studio model.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like when the studio would put the actors under contract and like, well, no, we own you now. You have to do this many pictures and this much publicity and basically do whatever we tell you to do.
Yeah. Mm. And so there was always that. And this is always the thing that comes up in the Elvis documentaries, but they did a good job in this one of like, what could have been? Could he have been this like soulful entertainer and this amazing actor that did really gritty work? But no, he was just doing those Elvis movies, which was the same storyline, you know, and they interview, like they interview Chuck D from Public Enemy, who's got that famous line, Elvis was a hero to most, but he never meant shit to me. Motherfuck him and John Wayne, you know, he was racist straight up and plain motherfuck him and John Wayne. And they interview Chuck D and he's like, yeah, I took a lot of shit for that because people like Elvis is this icon
on a pedestal.
Yeah. And, but Chuck also made a good point. He goes, and it almost sounds like maybe he's thought about this since that lyric dropped in the 89 or 90, whenever that.
Yeah, it's been a while.
It's been a while.
Yeah. And now the John Wayne conversation is just like, oh, he was definitely right about John Wayne.
Yeah. But. Well, Chuck D made a good point. He goes, to say that Elvis shouldn't have been allowed to do black music is just as ridiculous as saying a black person can't do classical because, they're not of German ancestry or whatever.
Like, it's, you know, remember there was a band, Living Color, remember them? Mm-hmm. They were basically a black heavy metal band.
Yeah.
And I was like, well, that's crazy. I'm like, why?
Why?
Why is it crazy?
They can do
whatever they want.
Anyone should be able to play whatever
they want. And they're a good heavy metal band.
Yeah, they're rock. Fucking bad brains, you know?
Yeah. I mean, so it's really, and it's more than just a history lesson on Elvis. It's more of like America and, you know, how the middle class is collapsing and all of the American, you know, Elvis was the American dream. And what happened? He got exploited. He became a drug addict.
That's so smart, though. I really appreciate documentaries that are trying to do that. I feel like the new Sam Cooke documentary that's on Netflix did that, too.
Oh, that's a great
because,
one.
Right, you're looking at a global thing that is of importance to many people as opposed to just the sit-down documentary that's only important to a couple of people who care about the artist. But, you know, you're trying to make them relevant in what they stood for and put them in a context.
You don't have to be a diehard Elvis fan to like this documentary. Mm-hmm. You know, that's what makes it fantastic. And they bring up a lot of stuff like, oh, Elvis helped out, you know, some black musicians, but then Chuck D's like, never saw him in the civil rights marches in the 60s. You know, Charlton Heston was doing that, and he named a bunch of other like white celebrities. And he's like, where was Elvis? He didn't want to cause any controversy. And Colonel Tom Parker was like, no, no. Mm. And
oh, I'm sure. Yeah, he was getting that in his, whispered in his ear. No, you can't. You can't go on that.
You can't make a stance on Vietnam. You can't make a stance on any of this. You know, and then they talk about the 68 comeback special, that TV special he did, which was sort of Elvis in his prime again, being Elvis. Mm-hmm. And, you know, he did that song, If I Can Dream. That's like the closest he got to commenting on, because it was 68. So Bobby had been assassinated. Dr. King had been assassinated already. We were in the height of Vietnam protests. But that was like the most Elvis could commit to in terms of talking about it. So it was, it's a fascinating documentary. It is really, and it interviews a lot of just working class, regular people throughout the country as they travel around the country. And they interview, God, I forget this guy's name, this like rapper who's all his modern, his raps are all just about capitalism has gutted us and everyone's lying. Both parties are lying. I mean, it's really
party dude.
Yeah, it's just like, wow. So it's a really, I don't know where you find it unless you're flying United, but
I think it is on iTunes though.
Okay.
Yeah.
It's worth seeing.
All right, so we'll talk about Greta.
Yes. Real quick.
You saw Greta, so tell us about that movie.
I saw Greta. Hopefully people who are listening know about the concept of the Grande Dame Guignol, which is the essentially whatever happened to Baby Jane and Hush Hush Sweet Charlotte and any of those movies that fit the bill of a psycho biddy. So the older woman who is, you know, kind of enslaving and torturing a younger or a more sprightly woman.
But did she know she was a vampire when she was entrapping her?
No. So,
Chloe Grace Moretz.
Yeah, Chloe Grace Moretz and Isabelle Huppert. And it's directed by Neil Jordan, who people remember from The Crying Game. Mm-hmm. And it's very different from The Crying Game. So
Chloe doesn't have a dick.
It's so like it's one of those things where like I wonder if people will go into this being like, oh, you know, that was a very interesting depiction of like a trans woman, you know, The Crying Game, and they'll be like, I would like to see this, and then they're like, they'll get Greta, which is a more, you know, kind of obvious and
right,
you know, fun kind of thing. Like there's blood, there's a lot of syringes going into people.
Good syringe pick.
Yeah. A lot of syringe action.
A lot of stalking.
Yeah, a lot of stalking. It's an interesting thing. My husband liked it more than I did, but I tend to watch more of these movies because this is my genre. And so to me, I felt like some of the pacing was a little bit wonky, and I got a little bit bored in some parts of it because I'm so used to the kind of really grand over the top performances. And I think that Isabelle Huppert is definitely delivering in some parts, you know, definitely towards the end. But I guess I was hoping for a little bit more of that front-loaded into the story. You know, I wanted her to be just a larger-than-life force. And I wanted the other actors to maybe play off of that. But it felt like they were in two different movies, you know?
Oh,
like,
wow.
Chloe Grace Moretz was not in this movie. She was in kind of like a 90s, not even a 90s, but like an aughts kind of like young thriller movie, you know, kind of like cheap dialogue and, you know, female friendships that don't really ring true at all. And and then, you know, Isabelle Huppert is in some like European psychodrama, and those are two different movies that were happening simultaneously. And some parts of that friction worked for me, some parts didn't, you know. It was still fun. I still recommend seeing it. But
I saw the trailer for it, and I it's funny. I had that reaction just from the trailer.
Oh, really?
Like, huh, is this going to be really interesting because it's so sort of disjointed? Is that part of its charm, or is it disjointed because there was like a script problem or something like that?
Or, and it's also all elements we've seen before in different movies.
That's part of it. Because it's got a really great concept to open it up. I really like the concept, but there's just not enough tension for me. There just wasn't enough tension. If you think about, like, you guys, do you like Hush, Hush, Sweet Charlotte or Whatever Happened to Baby Jane, those movies?
It's been a while since I've
some of that
seen
kind of
Baby
stuff.
Jane, yeah.
From the, yeah, I love the direction of those because you're supposed to feel weird throughout, right. You know? Mm-hmm. So like Robert Aldrich, the way that he would direct his psycho biddies was just, you know, a lot of strange Dutch angles or shooting upward on a staircase, lots of shadows. And, mm-hmm. and you know, this one is definitely more of like a daytime horror. And that's an interesting thing. Sometimes that works. I love when you can do a daytime horror. Mm-hmm. Well, obviously, Texas Chainsaw Massacre is one of the greatest. But for some reason, there just wasn't a lot of texture here for me.
Mm. Interesting. Interesting.
All right. So now we have our Patreon sponsors.
What's up, Patreon sponsors? We have a new one, actually. Thank you so much for supporting the show at patreon.com/comedyfilmnerds.
And we have a returning Patreon sponsor. Mm. Will Leonard, his wife Katie Bagwell, is once again riding the MS-150, a fundraising ride that's helping fuel progress toward a world free of MS, to ride from Houston to Austin at the end of April. The money raised will help fund amazing progress in MS research. And you can reach her donation page at willthetd.com/CFN. Will, willthetd.com/CFN. And Johnny Rulon is promoting his novel Green Cheek, A Junkie's Guide to Street Magic. It's on Amazon, both digital and hard copy. It's an experimental stream of consciousness novel which follows the exploits of the muse Calliope and her mortal lover T.S. on a journey through time, dreams, and the hidden places of a supernatural America. The website is happyhorrorshowproductions.com, happyhorrorshowproductions.com. And the Audacity Performing Arts Project produces after-school performing arts projects in poor, underfunded, and low-performing schools. Performing arts education, not a luxury. Please visit them at audacityperformingarts.com. That's audacityperformingarts.com. And from Chris Parker Howard, Coffee Over Suicide, a dramedy podcast about mental illness and choosing life over death one cup of coffee at a time. Get caught up on season one now before season two premieres in April. And find out more at coffeeoversuicide.com. That's coffeeoversuicide.com. And Alice Frazier, co-host of the Bugle podcast, host of Tea with Alice, brings you a series of three genre-bending solo stand-up shows that explore the boundary between comedy and tragedy. They were recorded back-to-back as a three-hour show at the Melbourne Comedy Festival with a binaural microphone, which creates an intensely immersive listening experience. Go to alicefrazier.com, alicefrazier.com. And Rebecca Evans, the art podcast. We move past hesitation, and we're true to ourselves, and find our own art in life. You want to hear some fun stories and get inspired? Check out The Art, facebook.com/theartpodcasts, with an S, facebook.com/theartpodcasts. And La Calavera by Alan Ross, the story of a pirate radio operator decides to go into the pirate cable TV business. Darren Loney, together with a group of misfits and the questionable guidance of a spiritual advisor in the form of Richard Nixon, gear up to take on the world's largest media conglomerate and its egomaniacal celebrity CEO. Check it out on Amazon in ebook and hard copy.
All right. Thank you all for supporting the show. When you go to the patreon.com/comedyfilmnerds, you allow us to do many fun things.
Yes, and like we had said before, we are going to be redoing the Patreon CFN page. That'll be probably later in the month. We'll be doing a little
revamp.
We
already made some little tweaks to it.
So. We did, but we're not getting rid of the ad tier, that's for sure. We're just going to make a couple of tweaks, that's for sure.
All right, let's watch this trailer. Now, this is the new Hellboy.
Yes, the Red Band trailer that just came out.
The trailer before the trailer.
I hate the trailer before the trailer. It's ridiculous.
On an island off the coast of Scotland.
Starting with an origin story, which we don't really need. We've already had two Hellboy movies.
Something that would end mankind.
Nazis. Mm-hmm. Bad.
Yep. During World War II, we know that's when Hellboy came in.
Show up.
Oh, yes.
Baby David Harbour.
You did.
We face every threat there is, and yet you take me in. Hello, son. You made me a goddamn weapon.
Where's my fucking violin?
It's a Red Band trailer because someone said fuck.
Out there, there's a 5th century sorceress who wants to bring down the curtain on London and the world.
Great. Homework.
Monsters, ghosts. Yes, this is Hellboy.
You were meant for this. Out of the ashes. New Eden will emerge.
Well, okay. I'd appreciate a prophecy with more relatable stakes.
It's not Guillermo del Toro.
I could tell without the style, you know?
Yeah, come on, let's do this.
And that one character turns into a jaguar monster. Neil Marshall. Oh, yeah, that's right. The Descent.
Be my king.
It's like riding a dragon.
He was directing on Game of Thrones, if I remember correctly. Oh. So maybe he was influenced.
I'm a Capricorn, and you're fucking nuts!
Well, I like this trailer a lot better than the first one, so I'm cautiously optimistic now about this one.
Okay. Yeah. I mean...
It's Hellboy.
I never gave a shit about this franchise. So it's hard for me to get excited.
Yeah, I've read all of them, so I'm a fan.
You're a Hellboy. Fan.
Yeah, and I go see Mike Mignola at Comic-Con and stop by his booth and usually buy a shirt or a hat every time. So
I liked the Ron Perlman version. I liked it.
It was two decent movies because Del Toro did both of them too.
Right.
They definitely have his fingerprints and style all over those movies. So let's check out the next one, Rocketman.
Right. Teaser trailer.
There are moments in a rock star's life that define who he is.
Get this trailer up before people forget about Bohemian Rhapsody.
There is no you. And it's going to be a wild ride.
I wonder if this will be up for a best costume designer. It's always interesting to see a biopic of someone who's still alive, too.
Mm-hmm.
So it'll definitely be interesting.
I'm not sure about that when I watch that trailer.
Yeah, I know. It's like it go either way.
It is, because part of me is like the stylized where they all start floating. That could be cool because now it's not just a paint-by-the-numbers biopic.
I prefer it. I prefer when the format fits the character, you know? Mm-hmm. I really love Jackie. People will argue with me about it, but I love Jackie because to me the form feels different for a biopic and it fits the kind of frantic state of the movie. Mm-hmm. Bohemian Rhapsody did not do that.
Yeah, that's the thing is sometimes they just sort of, yeah, so I don't know. But then is he singing? Because man, he doesn't sound like Elton John.
It has to be him singing. That's the first thing I was thinking too. Well, that doesn't sound like Elton John.
And that was taking me out of it. If I'm like, because Elton John has an amazing voice and a very distinctive voice, obviously. So and then when you have.
He's also not Scottish. Who's doing the voiceover on that trailer?
I don't know.
Yeah.
The guys from Trainspotting?
Yeah.
Yeah. They just brought him in.
They just
brought.
I don't know. They were available. What are we?
Any accent will do.
This is fine. Something from that island. So yeah,
still
I don't know.
UK. What does it matter?
I'm gonna see it.
Yeah.
Because I like Elton John, and I want it to be cool.
Right.
I want to be like, oh man, that scene where everyone floats was so awesome, and
you wonder about that too. Like you're saying, it's like you know, it's couldn't they find an actor that might have been from the same area is Elton John, they get like the dialect and stuff just right, you know, and like, well, it's too hard to look. It's too hard to find somebody there. Yeah.
Elton John is Australian?
Taron Egerton.
Oh.
Yeah, he's not from the same place.
not
the same continent?
No,
like.
No, it's a little further away.
They do have a Union Jack within their flag, but it's not. Yeah, I don't know.
So we'll see.
All right.
So now I want to mention this because I, especially for Star Wars fans that are coming up, I went to Disneyland over the weekend for my 50th birthday.
Wow. That's wild.
Yes. Turning 50, and I spent it, I realized I'm recording a podcast, and then I got my braces adjusted. So at 50, I have the life of a teenage boy. So.
Are you going to break out?
Yeah, I know. But went to Disneyland with my family, and I have to say, they have a new thing down at this area, like downtown Disney. It's like Universal City Walk. They have a VR experience, a Star Wars one, that's Secrets of the Empire. It doesn't matter what it's called. It's fucking amazing.
Really?
And you literally put on an entire rig. My whole family did it. It's four people go in at a time, so it was just my family. We were the only ones in it. And it literally lowers down from a harness. So it's got a giant computer on your back. The VR and a chest plate that goes on, and you go into this room, and then all of a sudden, you know, the goggles come down, and then the first thing you do, you realize you're in like a corridor, in like the Death Star or whatever, and you see each other. That's the first thing you do, is like you, because the computer gives the feedback of where the other people are in the room. So I'm seeing like my daughter, my wife, and my son, all as stormtroopers, because we're all stormtroopers. But then
they how I see you.
Yeah, as a family. As family. Stormtroopers. But they get the height right too. So my 10-year-old was a tiny little stormtrooper, and then everyone else was like their actual height. So, and then a door opens, and then the droid comes out and says, you got to come in here, and then we're going on a secret mission, all that stuff. So you actually walk through a door. It's not like you sit and do virtual reality. You walk through the environment.
Ooh.
So you go through, and it's like, all right, sit there. So, you know, you're looking at everything. You're in a shuttle, but there's an actual bench that you sit down, and then the shuttle takes you to the mission. And you're, like, solving puzzles on the walls. There's, like, levers and buttons, but you see it all in the virtual space. And then they're like, all right, well, now we're going to have to fight our way out. And then a panel opens up and there's blasters there. You each pick up a blaster and then you're shooting stormtroopers as they're shooting back at you. And then you get feedback. If you get hit, you feel it in your chest. So, and then you're trying to go through corridors, you're on like skiffs and you're moving around and you see lava, it gets warmer. Like, it's the most intense VR experience I've ever had. And if you're a Star Wars fan, you got to check it out. It's called The Void, and they're building them like all over the country. So, but it's like there's VR, and then, oh, these guys made a holodeck. It's like that kind of level, you know, that it goes to.
All right, so go to the Disney holodeck.
Yes, pretty much. Yeah, okay. You can either pick Star Wars or Wreck-It Ralph. They have a Wreck-It Ralph one too.
All right, I'm in.
So. All right, and DVD and Blu-ray.
And VOD.
And VNV on demand, indeed. We have Creed 2. Now, I liked this movie. I got some flack about liking this movie. I actually liked it. I thought it was following kind of the Rocky model, where the first movie was a little more dramatic and heartfelt. But then, you know, when Rocky 2 and, you know, Rocky 3 and Rocky 4, it got to be more popcorn-y movies with less dramatic elements. I really felt like this was, you know, more of a Rocky IV kind of thing, which didn't bother me, the format, because, you know, you've got the big fight with the Russian and all those things. And I thought it did a good job with what it was trying to be. And, you know, I forgave the flaws, and I still liked it. I thought Creed 2 was still a good movie. Some people hated it.
Did you see this movie, April?
I didn't hate it, but I thought that the pacing was so weird. I could not figure it out. It just felt like there was a fight, and then there was another fight. And then there was a fight. And then there was another fight. But you don't know exactly which ones are going to be the real important ones. Like, there's just not like a lot of kind of building up any kind of tension to anything. So
right.
I don't need them all to be dramatic. You know, it doesn't have to be that kind of thing. And in fact, I would say that the dramatic stuff didn't work for me in this.
Right.
And I was just like, maybe just forget about that and just make it about fighting the Russian. I don't know.
Well, that's what Rocky IV did, really.
Yeah.
Yeah, and Rocky, all the other Rocky movies, they always build up to the final fight.
Yes.
So that you can have just like, oh, he won these. These were tune-ups or whatever.
Right.
This is, you know, this is how he became champ or defended the belt or whatever.
And, you know, let me see him train in the snow. Finally. Okay.
Again.
Yes. Over and over. Instant Family. Was this the Mark Wahlberg movie that this is one of those movies that are like, oh, did that come out? Oh no, it already came out. It's done. All right.
Amazed this wasn't on my flights.
Yeah.
It is an airplane movie.
Right.
Mm-hmm. It's like designed for United.
They, yeah, it is. Like, I'm amazed they didn't just like...
They shot it on the like yeah, a screen the, size of the back of a... Yeah,
the back of a blue seat.
So, and the next movie is Green Book that is out now. And actually, one of the extras on the DVD that they just added
is
was...
Explaining why they never interviewed the family?
No, it's Spike Lee walking out of the Oscars. So...
For
no, I just... Made it.
There was like a half second where I was just like, oh shit, no they did not. Yeah. But I was like, what a baller move if they did.
I have a correction we have to make on this show. You, me, and Doug all got this wrong, and then we got to correct it on Facebook as the actual driver wasn't the screenwriter, it was his son. And it was such an obvious thing. I'm like, yeah, he would have been about 100 some years old if it was the original guy. So we never made that clear in the podcast.
Also, like the epilogue is like
he's dead. They remained like friends until they died.
Yeah, or something. Yeah.
Like within months apart because they were so heartbroken. Apparently, you know, like despite the fact that we can't find any pictures of them together.
Yeah. Like, yeah.
A lot of feelings.
So, this is the kind of movie that, make of it as what you will for this movie. It's, you know, you can enjoy it. You can know the history. You can know the, let's call them discrepancies in the stories.
Hollywood whitewashing.
Yeah. You can do all that. You could still enjoy the movie or you could not. You could do whatever you want with this movie.
As was my thing, I just went in there kind of cold as a movie.
Mm-hmm.
Good acting, good directing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
There's some real moments and real takeaways from the movie. Yeah,
it's a Hollywood movie.
You're like, yes, a Hollywood movie. This is
yes.
All the mm-hmm. like, my favorite part was like I was watching it at a screener at home for voting, and my husband walked in and he was just like, "Oh no, the black man and the white man are laughing together," and I was like, "What?" He's like, "That means something bad is about to happen to the black man." Like, and there was like 60 seconds later, something terrible. And like, so I was thinking about the formula of these movies, and I'm like, wow, they hit everything to a T, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It was a, basically a paint by number structure that you just kind of filled in.
Which you can like if you want.
Now, the favorite, that's different. You shouldn't like this movie at all. So
I'm going to say. One of the best of last year. So good.
I split on this movie. Like it's like all over the place. There's no mediocre response to this movie. People either love it or, like me, thought it was just awful. And this is where we can just agree to disagree.
I look forward to talking to you in 10 years when you know you're wrong.
Yeah. I promise you, in 10 years, I will revisit this movie and watch it again and see if my opinion changes.
I'll get a text on a space phone.
Yeah. Oh, you were right. Darn it.
Society will have collapsed.
Yeah.
You guys will bump into each other in a post-apocalyptic nightmare.
Yeah. And that will be the only movie that's left.
Yes.
You'd be like, you're right. I guess it's good.
Yeah, it's
good.
It's the only one that survived. Yeah. Free Solo. Also came out. Now, I never get a chance to see this movie. I'm excited to see it, especially Doug really liked it.
I feel
everyone who saw it really liked
it. And I feel like you should see it on a big screen because of the photography of the climbing and everything.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I should, a caveat for me, I wrote a lot of copy for this movie for Nat Geo. I do some work for them.
Oh, okay.
So I just need people to know that. But then I'm going to say that I love this movie.
Right.
Mm-hmm. It was, you know, I was watching it on a tiny laptop. Top screen, like an unfinished version, and was just like, oh shit, oh god, no. Oh my god. To the point where I'm sure my neighbors were like, is she fucking or what? Like, is
that... very
and why
terrified.
Is she so scared?
Oh, no. They're like, what's happening? So it's a very intense movie, and it also kind of shines this interesting light on these types of people that we always profile in these sports documentaries, because it reminds people that, like, they're freaks. It's just like, hey, just to let you know, like, this, none of this is normal. And there are people who are affected by what he's doing, and it's driving them insane.
Yeah. It's like no one... Well, you always ask yourself, what type of a person would climb the face of a fucking mountain
without
anything?
Yeah.
A regular rock climber is a little off their goddamn gourd.
Right.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so what you are talking about an extreme personality.
Yeah.
Right.
That is like 1/1000th of a percentage of the population or something like that.
Yeah.
Now, I'm sure I haven't seen the movie yet, but there's got to be some dialogue about he's sure he will never fall. Like that kind of thing.
He's sure that he might.
Oh, okay.
He's a really weird person and just kind of like accepts that like if that's what happens, then that's what happens. But he's an over-preparer to the point where it's like you can tell that they might be on the spectrum of some sort.
Oh, okay.
And so he's over-preparing to like the tiniest degree of, you know, like this millimeter of space on this rock is where this little pinky is going to go. It's really fascinating. Mm. Very fascinating.
All right. Now I want to check it out even more.
I think those extreme sports people always just are like, yeah, I could die. Mm-hmm. That's why I'm doing it. Like the big wave surfing documentaries that I've watched, they're all just like, yeah, you're...
Isn't there like a kind of a hint of like thinking you're immortal in, you know, the extreme sports? No, there's not.
No.
Oh, okay.
They're very aware of it. Mm. For the ones, the docs that I've seen and some of the people that I've met, they're very aware because every year people die from this.
Yeah, right. I've seen Point Break. I know.
It's a real thing. Bodie.
Bodie.
Mm-hmm. All right. And the next one is Vox Lux. This is the kind of like, remember this weird singer type movie that it was like, is it they trying to make fun of Lady Gaga? I'm not sure. This was the
with
Natalie Portman. Yeah, yeah.
Brady Corbett's movie. Yes.
Yeah, it was. It's
did
like,
you see it?
I loved it. Yeah. It's so fucking weird. It's so weird. It is hitting all of my spots of like halfway through. I was like, do I hate this? Nope. I'm just going to go through and I'm going to love it and I'm going to appreciate like every choice.
Partly like a crime movie at some point.
Yes.
Like, yeah. Because the trailer makes no sense.
No, and it can't. There is no way to make a trailer for this. He made a movie that you can't make a trailer for, and I'm sure that it drove the trailer houses really insane. You can't describe it without revealing every single spoiler. There's a huge fight about whether it's poptimism or whether it's anti-poptimism, and I just love it. I think it is so weird, and I will never see anything else like it. And Sia wrote, Sia the pop star, she wrote all the songs for it. So it has all of these interesting, dark melodies that are threaded throughout. And it is Natalie Portman's accent. I'm just so into it. She's like, she's doing the extra thing. She's doing like the Isabelle Huppert thing and Greta, where it's just like, thank you for being in whatever movie you're being in.
Because it literally came and went. Like it felt like it was, they were trying to position it a little bit as a awards type movie, but then it like disappeared like almost instantly.
Because it's too weird. Mm-hmm. There's like, I mean, I love weird movies because I'm ahead of the curve, you know. but it's a real hard fucking sell. Even like some of my best friends were like, "Yeah, this made me angry," you know. Sorry.
Well, you've got me curious to see it now for sure.
You won't have a middling opinion. I can't imagine. Yeah. So.
All right.
I doubt I'll see it on a plane though. Sounds like it's not a plane movie.
Oh, I hope someday.
And the last movie is Ben Is Back. This is the Julia Roberts with the drug addicted side.
Right. Mm-hmm. Right. This is the whole wave of
the
drug addict son movies that came out. Yeah. Beautiful Boy. And...
Or Sumka getting him into therapy.
Yeah.
Or even the conversion therapy movie.
Beautiful Ben Erased.
Pretty much. Yeah. Boy Erased. And. So now, did you see this one?
No, okay. I didn't see any of the three. The Beautiful Ben Erased. I didn't have it in me. I've seen like every single other movie, but something about those trio coming out at the same time was just like, I just can't do it.
I will say The Boy Erased. It wasn't a perfect movie, but Nicole Kidman should have been nominated for supporting.
Really? Okay.
Yeah, she did a really good job.
Beautiful Boy was really good. I liked it a lot. It's based on a true story and a book and everything. And Steve Carell did it really. Everybody. It was good ensemble cast. And
that's Timothy Chalamet with him, right? Is that the one?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yes.
All right, and then the site spotlight and the fan feedback I want to talk to you guys about. This is our final month of clearing out some of the store, including all the Dana Gould merch. Everything is 20% off, and just use the coupon code Dana and free T-shirt with every T-shirt order. So you buy two T-shirts, you're going to get four. So check that out. Also, Allison Rosen's merch, use the coupon code Snuggle for 20% off, and Jackie Cation, 20% off, use the code Dork. And because this is the last month, the end of the month, all that stuff is getting a return. Anything we haven't sold, it will be out of the store. So check it out. Pay less. Why not pay less? Get some free stuff. You know, you buy an Allison Rosen shirt, you're going to get a free one, too.
Come on now.
You're going to get a free mystery shirt. So buy two. Buy Dana Gould, buy Allison, and you get another two free shirts.
Coming out this week, Captain Marvel.
Yes, now you got a little preview here before we saw it.
It's got a little aperitif.
And then we're going to be doing a spoiler and a regular episode. We'll be talking about Captain Marvel a fair amount. However, not next week, because we have a special summer movie preview with Laura House, because Graham will be on the road. So that'll be a banked dropped episode for next week. But as soon as is physically able, we will be recording a spoiler up for Captain Marvel.
Do it.
And Apollo 11, this is a documentary. I saw the trailer for this, and I'm like, what? It kind of looks okay, but it also looks like, well, I feel like I already saw this on the Discovery Channel kind of thing. Like I'm not sure what this is bringing to the Apollo table, this documentary.
It's for nerds like me.
Yeah.
I'm an Apollo 11 moon landing nerd. Mm-hmm.
I think it's going to be really good.
Yeah.
I'm down with... Yeah, mm-hmm. I'm done with this.
In a sense, it reminds me in form and structure of Jane, the Brett Morgan documentary on Jane mm-hmm. Goodall, because it's all found footage that they had.
Right.
They have to reconstruct mm-hmm. into this narrative with new sound and you know new color and that kind of thing.
And I'm sure it'll move I'm sure it'll move quicker than First Man, though.
Yeah, and this summer is the 50th anniversary of the landing on the moon.
Oh, there we go. You know, allegedly.
All right, here we go.
No one told me that was this place.
I'm saying they went a year earlier. I think it's 51. That's what I'm saying.
Oh, God. Listen to Sam Tripoli's Tinfoil Hat podcast, everybody, where you get to find they landed on the goddamn moon.
I have to say, though, that's my favorite conspiracy theory out of all of them.
Because it's so easy to refute.
Yes,
so easy
exactly.
To go, absolutely did it.
It's like flat Earth. It's like, well, are you sure? That's where you want to stay? The Earth is flat?
Oh, really? Flat Earth is like, have you ever sat in a window seat on an airplane?
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, ever done
that's they're definitely one of my favorites. It's like the moon landing. Like, really? That's fake? Out of everything? That's what you're going to pick? The moon landing?
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. So, and How to Train Your Dragon, The Hidden World. It is out already, but I wanted to talk about it because it's one that I definitely still want to see. It looks really good.
Yeah.
I'm a fan of the franchise. I didn't love the second one, but I did love the first one. So I'm really anxious to see how they... wrap up.
Yeah, I'm a little the trailer for Dragon 3 was a little like feels like the same storyline. A bunch of crazy bad dragons. There's a guy that wants to get rid of them.
Mm-hmm.
Right? They gotta go fight them.
Yeah.
You know,
it's like life. It's just life is just constantly there's more bad dragons. Like you don't get rid of them forever.
You don't.
Come back.
They always come back.
They make more.
There's more dragons. All right, folks. That is our episode. April Wolf, thank you so much for coming out.
Thanks for having me.
Where can people listen to you, find you online?
You can see me screaming on Twitter. That's where that happens. Complain about something. I'm A Wolf, full of people want to follow. Otherwise, Switchblade Sisters and Who Shot Ya are both on Maximum Fun Network.
Awesome. Check those out. Progressive Comedy Tour this week. We're coming to the Gulf States March 10th through the 13th. Ron Placone and I are coming to Lafayette, Louisiana, Oxford, Mississippi, Pensacola, Florida, and New Orleans, the Big Easy. Go to grahamelwood.com. Get your tickets, everybody. I've never been in the state of Mississippi.
Ever?
I've maybe driven through like a corner of it, but I've never performed in it. So this is my first time ever performing in.
Oh, cool.
Yep.
Well, hope it goes well.
Who knows? Might be my last run, guys. So go to grahamelwood.com.
All right. And please check out the Long Go Far Away graphic novel. The hard copies are at comedyfilmnerds.com. It will be digital with under Starburns Press. In it's looking like April-ish, late April, and it'll start releasing digitally there. That's Dan Harmon's company. And check out my other podcast, Conversations from the Abyss, and really fun 15-minute Twilight Zone-y episodes. The one called Alive is available right now, and it features Laura House, Paul Gilmartin, and a little cameo by Mr. Graham Elwood about a man who has an unusual conversation with his phone while he drives. Check it out.
All right, guys, that's our episode. Thank you, April. Thank you, Aaron Brungart, and everybody at the All Things Comedy World Headquarters. My name is Graham Elwood.
And I'm Chris Mancini. And as always, remember,
Han shot first. R.I.P. Brody.